episode 18 of season 17, Alternative Energy and Alternative Security.
In this episode, electricity abounds without proportional CO2 output. Where to draw the line with online comments and code in uncomfortable places. All this and more with Lyle and Miles in this week in geek news.
My name is Lyle Troxell, and with me in the air room I have Miles Elam. He's a pedant and a programmer and an all-around nice guy. Hi.
Hi.
We have a little bit of follow-up, specifically last week, what did not happen to you when you downloaded Handbrake, because you luckily narrowly escaped picking...
I won the coin toss, yeah.
You won the coin toss with regards to what mirror you downloaded Handbrake on. And obviously not everyone was so fortunate as you to not get the infected payload for the 3 days that it was infected without anyone knowing it.
50% of them, in fact.
Yes. Steven, who works at Panic Inc., the makers of quite a few cool apps, including Transit, which is an FTP, SFTP client, he was not so fortunate. He pulled the black marble on that lottery. So his machine was taken over, and hacked in, if you will. All his stuff was stolen off the machine. And also on that machine were credentials for accessing the GitHub repository of the company, which is where the source code is held. And the source code was also, part of it at least, was taken. Some things weren't. They were able to change the credentials relatively quickly. But some hacker out there got access to their software. Now, they're not an open source company, so their entire business model is based off of selling their software. So they sat down and, in a meeting as a company, decided, what are they going to do about this? Where does it fit? You know, their source code is out there. Some things could happen. So one of the things they talked about was, well, this hacker could build a free version of their app or a cheaper version of their app and distribute it. And the truth is, they thought, well, that's actually not a problem because there are other people that have already done that. They've already made kind of clones and cracks of their app and rebundled them. So that's not really a threat. It doesn't change very much. Mm-hmm. They could make a malware-infected version of their app, which is actually how they got infected, right? So that could be bad because people could download their software thinking it's their software. In reality, it would be a malware version. And this seems likely, given the person was already doing that. But we will find them and, working with Apple, shut them down. Like, they'll just continue to work that process.
Or they will.
Yes. The company will. So, make sure to minimize your risk. Never download software unless it's from the source and double check it, right? And maybe don't use a mirror or go check the SHA key. As a kind of a warning.
The only real fix of this is you check the SHA hash.
Definitely.
SHA 256 hash.
And hope the root server wasn't a problem.
Right. But yeah, there's really no way around that. There's no, like, don't use a mirror. That just doesn't work. Many times you didn't even realize when you click on the download link that you're not going to a mirror, which is the case with Handbrake. There's no explicit mirror link. It's just you click download and it takes you to what you need to do. Automatically figures out which mirror you're going to go to. So really, you would have to check the SHA-256 cache. And honestly, I don't expect people will do it.
No, I don't either.
Because I don't expect myself to do it.
And the solution to this, obviously, is the different stores that are out there for software development, right? Like, that's why on the Macintosh, you have to be kind of technically savvy to make it such that you can install from any other source other than the App Store, right? You've got to disable a feature and give a warning and... Of course, as technical people do that all the time. We download other things. But for the layman, that's the way to go, right? Having the system just kind of take care of it for you. It is interesting, though, that gatekeeper is very different than it used to be. It used to be you go to a store and you'd buy shrink wrap. And because it's in the store, you kind of know it's safe.
Well, I mean, there are instances where
it's not.
It was not, but yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought it was an interesting story, a little blog about it. And also being very public about this, it gives me a lot of... It gives me warm fuzzies for Panic Inc. that they were decided to be very public about this, talk about how it happened. None of their user data is all protected. They actually use Stripe for credit card processing. They don't even have credit cards. And it looks like all the stuff that is yours for some of their services, they've got like cloud type services, that's encrypted and they don't even have the key. You have the key for their service, which of course is the best way to deal with cloud level data. You just don't let the cloud provider have your keys. Keep it encrypted at the barrier. Anyway, I thought it was a pretty interesting story. So thank you for Panic for sharing about that. Of course, what we talk about is available up at geekspeak.org. Let's talk about California and energy.
looks like, for one particular day anyway, that most of the Golden State's power was generated using renewable methods. Now, that can be a combination of wind and solar and whatever else may...
Is hydro considered renewable?
It is, but I don't know that hydro makes up a huge percentage of California energy production. Hydro is very geography specific.
Yeah.
So unless you have a Niagara Falls ready to go, then if you build up a dam like you do at, say, Hoover Dam, you need to make a major change to the overall environment, in case blocking the Colorado River. In California, not so much with your possibilities there. They could make some large – we do have some dams.
Yeah, we do have some. But it's not a giant influence.
Right. It's not compared to the nuclear plants that we have – nuclear reactors we have, and definitely not compared to natural gas production, which is another big one.
Of course, natural gas production isn't renewable.
It is absolutely not.
Okay, so we were able to achieve a high percentage of renewable resources for only a day or two. Why was it a short-lived thing?
Actually, for last month, it was 67.2%.
Renewable?
Yes.
Oh, so you're saying that we've just passed the threshold. We'll now be renewable mostly in the state, or I guess in the warm months.
Yeah, although that 67.2 is not considering the hydropower. You add in hydropower, okay, and it rises to 80.7%.
Oh, that's a bit then for hydro.
But that total energy generation on May 13th. So a specific – I take it back. There was a specific day. It's an event that happened last month. It was not an aggregate over last month.
Okay, I see. We had an event. Okay, gotcha. Yeah,
so for one specific day, May 13th, 80% of total energy generation in the state of California was from renewable resources.
Mm-hmm.
That particular day ended up being something useful. You can't base that off of every single day. Like, there are a lot of days where it was a lot lower than that.
Sure.
But
we're getting closer.
Yeah, it shows a lot of promise. And that is awesome, especially with regard to how much rollout there is for people getting solar panels on their roofs and stuff like that. It does call into question what the energy utilities, how they will manage it. While, for example, PG&E and Southern
California – Pacific Gas and Electric is a large company about energy in this.
Yeah, California. And Southern California Electric. They do have large solar farms.
Mm-hmm.
They do use solar themselves for their grid infrastructure. There is a lot of individual use from consumers, you know, solar panels on their roofs, you know, things like that, that are offsetting their ability to sell energy to recoup the cost of their infrastructure.
Why?
As more power comes from a source other than the utilities, it means that any planning that they did previously in terms of building out infrastructure, transitioning from one fuel to another, that could be
makes it challenging.
Things that we have as a state have pushed them to do, to say don't do nuclear as much, or don't do oil or fossil fuels in general that much, transition over, that infrastructure and that outlay of resources means that they have debts that they need to pay off. And as more people start having solar panels of their own, that means that debt does not get paid off as readily.
Right.
It means that, for example, to recoup their costs, they may
have to raise
rates. But then raising rates means that it's more likely that someone will say, hey, it's cost effective for me to get solar panels now.
Right.
And wash, rinse, repeat. You end up with
a stable ground of growth in solar panels at the home.
Yes.
Effectively.
But also a concern, because the grid is not something you just should wave away to say you're not concerned about it, because a lot of people who have solar panels don't necessarily have a whole bank of batteries. They haven't all gotten power walls from Tesla. And it's a way to offset the amount of power generation. It's useful for summer heat, for example, air conditioning, like the sun is shining down. It offsets a lot of that power, takes away that peak load, takes the edge off, as it were, off the grid. But if you take away the grid altogether, you end up with a situation where the sun isn't shining and suddenly you don't have enough power to run everything that you want to do. You start getting brownouts. So it's a give and take. Things are getting complex.
So France, as you know, kind of famously is like 75% nuclear energy.
Yes.
They're the kind of gold standard on nuclear energy.
Have been for some time, and it was by necessity. It was not because France post-World War II said, hey, we prefer nuclear. It's more
France's electric company is EDF. It's a state-owned state-owned electrical system. And they have a 25-year plan to get down to 50% of nuclear. So that's their stated goal as a state. And, of course, in February there was an explosion.
As a nation state. As a nation state. We were talking about California as a state.
Sorry, nation state.
Yes.
In February, of course, 2017, there was an explosion at one of the nuclear power plants. So there's not everybody's gung-ho about nuclear energy in France. And recently a memo or a rumor had been spread that the organization was actually pushing back their 50% date for another 50 years instead of 25 years. And they, on their official Twitter account, EDF said on that it formally denied the malicious rumors about the existence of a secret plan which sets back the 50% nuclear target to 2050. And they added in general discussions that this law went into effect in 2015 that states that they want to cut back on nuclear. The article that I've got in front of me doesn't have a lot of details about why they're cutting down the nuclear energy, but all the reporting around that I've read has to do with moving towards more renewable sources, because just like fossil fuels, nuclear actually isn't a renewable source. You know, it's a mined material and a lot of process in place.
Yeah.
Hey, you can't argue against that. That is totally true. It's not a renewable source.
It's absolutely true.
Yeah.
The amount of fuel that they go through, especially because the European Union doesn't have the restrictions that the U.S. has on enriching existing spent fuel to put it back into their plants. The European Union, when they have nuclear plants, the fuel tends to go a lot further. Mm-hmm. When you put it through a light water reactor in the U.S., you use up about 2% of the energy potential, and then you put it in a barrel and
make it waste.
Yeah, and then tell it, okay, we're going to put this into a cooling
pool. We effectively create a lot more waste than the French do in their same generation.
And the nuclear plants are an older design.
You also have a situation where the newer nuclear power plants, especially, are. It is true that they're not renewable, but they don't have the kind of horrible side effects of burning fossil fuels has in our global warming effort.
They are not. It's not a renewable resource. It is also not a CO2 producing resource.
That's right. And right now, the thing we're trying to cut down is CO2, and that's why we're moving towards renewable, which aren't CO2, but nuclear is not CO2, but also not renewable.
Yeah. So.
The French ecology minister, Nicolas Hulot, also a well-known environmental activist, said that, yeah, they're still committed to the 50% reduction by 2025, and they're closing their oldest nuclear power plant. So,
yeah, closing an old plant makes a lot of sense to me. They tend to be the older design, usually don't have the same lessons learned over time. And to be honest, by 2050, reducing the amount of nuclear also seems like a reasonable goal because you're going to be increasing the amount of renewable resources, solar and the wind.
Especially the amount of resources as a society we're putting into making these renewables more efficient and more effective.
So even if you had the same number of reactors live, if you increase dramatically the number of renewables, you've reduced the proportion or percentage of the electricity generated from nuclear. Yeah. That said, just as a personal note, I would much rather that nuclear were kept online and you prioritize decommissioning fossil fuel plants and then you start decommissioning the nuclear plants as all the entire time the renewable resources are ramping up and displacing the existing ones.
Yeah. All right. Let's go ahead and talk about Facebook because it's been 15 minutes. We haven't even done that yet. What's going on with Facebook this week?
Well, there are a couple of things. One, their content moderation guidelines were leaked online. This is deciding which posts are considered just mildly distasteful and therefore not going to be banned versus ones that are actually violations of their terms of service.
Okay, so you can put stuff on Facebook which will be taken down.
Oh, yeah, certainly,
of,
okay. Certainly.
And so this is about the guidelines of whether it gets taken down or not.
It's where you talk about the difference between a specific threat to another person.
Obviously, should be taken down.
But they do allow things like a vague threat that doesn't look like there is specific intent, no matter how abusive it might be. Yes. For example, aside from the simple ones like you're not allowed to threaten the president because that's a federal law,
mm-hmm.
That you would be able to say, hey, let's go beat up some fatties.
What? That seems threatening.
Yeah, but that's acceptable because it's not considered a specific threat according to Facebook's guidelines. In other words, bullying seems
What if it's
like...
hate speech, though?
But that's the thing, though.
I mean, if you replace fatties with a derogatory term for race or gender, it seems like it would be pretty clear.
But that's the thing, though, is that you're talking about these guidelines are saying essentially that bullying is okay as long as you're not too specific about it. If you do a little dance around it, or if you speak about all fat people that way, or if you say, hey, when you, there's an actual case here where it was saying, if you're going to break a woman's neck, make sure you put all the pressure in the middle. That was something that was flagged as saying, nope, that doesn't violate our guidelines.
Ew.
Exactly. It's this whole thing. It very much reminds me of our society standards for – because I think they are trying to model society. They're trying to get as little pushback as possible for wide swaths.
Yeah.
But it also mirrors what we see in our society with regard to if you show a female nipple on TV, suddenly it's a big deal. It's horrible.
$20,000 fine.
Yeah. You have – oh my god, that happened at the Super Bowl, you know, and it – you know. That whole thing. But if you show someone get shot multiple times, you know, blood spattering, whatever, it's like, oh, well, you know, it's mildly distasteful, but that's okay. The idea that one is so much worse than the other, a fundamental piece of a human body is so much worse than a human body being mutilated by projectiles.
Yeah. So what is the purpose of the guideline? It is to
– the guideline is Facebook has a policy where they're trying to keep abusive material off of it.
But what purpose do they have for that guideline? Like why keep abusive material off? Because, of course, anytime you make the line, anytime you decide where it is, you are deciding what is
exactly.
acceptable speech and what is not acceptable speech. So
yes.
You're stepping into that role. And it sounds like they've decided to make a decision on some things, but it feels like if you're doing that at all – you're taking a lot of ownership of where that line is.
That is true, and that's where a lot of the criticism of these guidelines that have been leaked
mm-hmm.
comes from, is saying you have guidelines, but you've set the bar – and it's not just setting the bar low.
It's
setting the bar in a very specific place. Like I said, you can't have a topless woman on there.
On Facebook?
On Facebook.
Seriously, you can't have any – like. Breast shown on Facebook?
No, absolutely not.
In the United States or anywhere in Facebook?
I don't know overall, but I do know in the U.S. that is absolutely a guideline.
Wow.
And I know several
friends...
Well,
you can describe how to break someone's neck. That's okay.
Apparently.
That's kind of disturbing.
Yeah, like I said, this is a reflection of the society we live in
right.
as well.
You're totally right that what you want to do on a situation like this is kind of codify what is socially acceptable. At the same time, when you start thinking about what's socially acceptable, which you have to do in a guideline like this, you can see the inequity in our society and you can go, oh, that might be socially acceptable, but that's wrong anyway. And we want a society that doesn't have that as an acceptable social norm. So they make a rule that allows you not to say how to kill a person of a certain, you know, genre or type. And when they do that, of course, that means those people will feel like their voices are being subjugated and they will move to another platform. And that's why Facebook doesn't want to do that. They don't want to lose the accepted norm people. They want to have the bell curve, the large bell curve area. They want to have as many of that people as possible.
Yes. There is the free speech aspect of there, saying they want to have free flow of speech on the network. there are a lot of people that have that as a goal,
yeah.
even if it isn't a company policy per se, although I think they have added that as saying that that is part of their platform. They do want to foster free speech. They do want to say they want to take credit for a lot of the dialogue that's going on in repressive yeah. environments.
I have to say that I think that leaning towards free speech is I very much agree with leaning towards free speech, and it would be hard for me to think that it's a I'd have a hard time stopping anybody's free speech at any level. And Facebook's a great example of this potentially working in that you're kind of outing the people. I mean, they're public, right? Like in the sense that if you're sharing with people and the name is associated, they're declaring who they are.
Yes, but that same thing can be said, for example, a woman showing a topless photo of herself on the network. You know who they are. They're outing themselves. They're saying it. That exact same argument works for any type of conduct.
Yeah,
that's on the.
Why are they? Why are they concerned about nipples showing? Because they don't want to be a porn site. Like, is that the thing? And they don't want to be associated with pornography.
It is a taboo in U.S. society.
Well, it's a stupid taboo.
I mean, it's hard enough to get laws protecting breastfeeding in public, even yeah. though you really can't see the nipple for the most part. Maybe you can see some aureola, but for the most part, it's the baby is there. The head is there. That's the whole point of breastfeeding, is that the head is there.
Yeah.
But
you can't feed your baby in public. Ridiculous.
Well, you can in a lot of places.
Not on
now.
Facebook. Well, maybe on Facebook it's okay because
you can't see the nipple.
There's a concern. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that said,
sometimes we go into topics, by the way, that we have no right talking about in a lot of ways.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think we have a right to talk about this?
Well, I think that us talking about nipple bearing in general.
Oh, because we're men.
Well,
because that's one of the funny parts, is that we can take part in the conversation, in that there have been cases where people have on Facebook taken a picture of a nude woman and then photoshopped a man's nipples onto that woman. And that makes it acceptable according to their guidelines.
That's great.
It's ridiculous.
It is
ridiculous.
The whole thing is ridiculous.
It is absurd.
But it's the society that's ridiculous. In the sense of the nipple thing, it's the society. Like streaming television. I mean, linear television can't do that either, right? Like there's FCC regulations about swearing. We are a society that's very concerned about sexuality and language.
Yes. But
and not about violence.
But let's be clear. Most Silicon Valley companies, especially the large ones that seem to be on the forefront of technology, whether they be Facebook or Google or Amazon,
yeah.
do not market themselves as "we reflect society." They market themselves as "we are bringing society forward." That is part and parcel with their public positions.
Well, what do you think Facebook should do in changing this document? Where do you think their line should be?
For me to dictate where the line is, maybe that is overstepping my position. But I do believe the line should be drawn somewhere other than, and I will quote from their guidelines of what is acceptable, "to snap a bitch's neck, make sure to apply all of your pressure to the middle of the throat."
That's
actual
acceptable.
Comment, and that was considered not violating Facebook rules. "Kick a person with red hair." "Let's beat up fat kids."
These are all things that are acceptable in Facebook's.
These are all things that do not violate their terms of service, that they will not delete the comment, nor will they make sanctions upon
If you've got a video of like people coming out of the water and one of the people is a woman with her shirt off and her breast is shown, that's unacceptable.
Correct.
Yeah, that's a stupid line. They're definitely doing it wrong.
So for me to say this is where the line is, I'm not going to do that. But I will say I believe it is a far, far distance from where they have set it now.
Right. All right. Well, thank you for that. You actually have another Facebook story, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But I want to give a little bit of some kind of bad news. One of our patrons, Chris Irwin, who donates money every month and helps support the show, and is actually coming out to California for our event, which I'll talk about in just a second, that's happening next month. Chris got a Bolt, and he was really excited about the Chevy Bolt. It's got a long-distance electric vehicle. I've got a Leaf, so we've been kind of chatting about it, and his vehicle's awesome. And he's out of state, and he just got rear-ended, and the vehicle looks like it's totaled. I haven't actually heard. Guess what the person was doing behind him?
Facebooking?
Texting, yeah, on the phone. If you're driving, you shouldn't have anything in your hands, and you shouldn't be looking at anything else besides the road and your mirrors. And I know it's really hard because it's just such an easy thing. We get used to it. Just don't do it. Put the phone down. Don't. And if you want to use the phone, pull over. If you're driving, pull over. I do this actually quite a bit. Anyway, sorry for Chris's loss. The thing that kind of stinks is since he's out of California, I don't know if he can get that one, which bummer. But at least he's okay.
Out of California can't get one. I don't understand.
It's hard to get these vehicles. These vehicles are really difficult to get. And I think he got it from California, even though he's outside of California. And that's really? Actually not something you're supposed to do. Yeah.
Huh. I knew Tesla was an issue because Tesla sells direct.
Yeah.
And so they don't go through dealerships. But Chevrolet goes through dealerships.
I doubt that they're selling them in some states. I don't know. That's fine with the details about that. Any case, sorry for your loss, Chris. Sucks. Look forward to seeing you on June 19th. We're doing an event in Ben Lomond, California. I've mentioned this on the show before, but I would love it if people went ahead and if they're planning on coming to go ahead and pick up your free tickets just to let us know how many people are coming. Miles and I are going to do the show. I think we're going to have a few other people. I think Brian's going to be there. And we'll probably have a little bit of music. And in general, it should be a hoot. It is June 19th at 6 p.m. at Park Hall in Ben Lomond. And you can learn more about everything we're doing at live.geekspeak.org. And I welcome our listeners and also all members of the San Lorenzo Valley community. All right, Miles Elam.
So I just wanted to make a quick little addendum. I was looking up Chevy Bolt, and they were only available from a handful of states, California and Oregon, to begin with, and then rolling out further. It is not because they are banned. It's simply the rollout on a state-by-state basis.
Oh, I wouldn't say it's banned. No. It's just about how many they can sell, and they can sell better there, and so they rolled them out there.
Right. So by September, every state could get one. And already now, by May, you have a dozen states that you can buy them from.
Yeah, they're a really cool vehicle. Long range. Chris was saying he really liked his a lot.
So definitely not the same situation as Tesla.
Oh, no.
With regard to how you buy it or where you buy it, it's not at all the same.
And having an electric vehicle, I love it. I'm just like addicted to it. The only thing I don't like is it's got noises that it turns, plays speakers when you're driving too slow. So I'm in this new community. I'm meeting all my neighbors and my car goes beep, beep, beep whenever I back up, and I have to back up a lot. And then also it has like a forward sound that's kind of like a sound, which comes from a speaker because the vehicle is so quiet. I got to hack into it. I finally decided I'm going to hack into this thing and just turn those frigging things off. I hate it. I just want a dashboard switch that can mute them so that when I leave in the morning, I don't wake up my neighbors.
They had to do it by California law. This is something that got me on the DMV test a while back on the written.
You actually got a question wrong on the DMV test?
I got a question wrong on the DMV test. I started using what seemed rational to me at the time when I had a Prius, which was, what are you supposed to do if you see someone who is blind standing at the crosswalk? And the answer is, you're supposed to creep up to the very edge of the crosswalk so that the person can hear your car engine.
Oh, interesting.
And my Prius, at a stop, did not have a car engine. It didn't make any sense to me to actually make that
right
choice.
You can't creep up.
Right. And so I was like, oh, well, it wouldn't be that. You know, choose something else. No, you have to have the engine noise. That doesn't work with me.
But your Prius is completely silent when it's stopped.
Yeah, exactly.
When it creeps, is it silent or does it make an engine sound?
No, it was completely silent.
So they added that in. They added the requirement.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. I think
get a vehicle retrofit. It's probably not compatible with state laws.
Well, I don't have the Prius anymore.
Oh, that's good.
Right. But I mean, at the same time, it's interesting that I think they made that as a mandate. It wasn't something that was like, oh, let's do this because it would really customers would really like it. I think a lot of customers are like you, going, I hate this.
Yeah.
The car is absolutely silent except for this artificial rumbling noise. Like the reason why you got an electric car was so you didn't have to hear the rumbling noise, right? And partially.
I was just, I'm starting to live in this new community. I don't know any of the neighbors really. I just moved in. And I'm there and thinking, I probably know people around me through friends, right? Because I've been in the same area for a long time. I was born and raised in the Santa Cruz Mountains. So I seem to know people once you get started chatting with stuff, but I don't really know my neighbors. So I was thinking, God, it'd be kind of cool if there was like a 6 degrees of separation kind of system that you could kind of connect to people you know through other people by kind of request. Mm-hmm. So I could say, whoever lives at this address, I want to meet them. And then the LinkedIn kind of capability of having different circles would connect you through. That'd be kind of cool. It's a little creepy, but it could be kind of useful. And additionally, it would be really cool to just say, I want some system to kind of understand, I want to meet friends of my friends that have more connection with me other than just the friendship, right? I want to meet the friends of the friend who also plays ukulele. Or, you know, let's say my friend doesn't play ukulele, but I play ukulele and the friend of the friend plays ukulele. So it makes more sense for me to be connected to that person because then we can play ukulele together and the introduction could happen through our friend, right? Mm-hmm. And I was thinking of that as I was driving between late night, between making a bed and trying to get my dog back to the right house. And I'm doing a lot of late night stuff right now. And then I come in, I'm reading these story headlines, and I see that Facebook's doing something like this.
Yeah. Zuckerberg, who vehemently says he's not running for president.
Does he say it a lot?
He does. Because people were talking about, hey, he's doing some stuff that sounds like he's running for president. And he said, no, I'm not running for president. He is learning about relationships. How
he invented Facebook and has been running it for years. He should know a little bit about relationships.
Well, you never know. So one of the things he wants to do is a way to connect you to people that you quote unquote should know. In other words, people who by algorithm you look and say, these people
should know each other,
kind of in the same circle of friends. They just haven't met each other yet.
Well, not even the same circles. They just do so many of the similar things.
Right. They seem to have the same temperament. They use the same verbiage online. They have the same reactions to different stimulus. And just the whole thing, I have to admit, kind of creeps me out. They have the data. Yeah,
wouldn't it be a better world if you could meet someone that you liked instantaneously?
It feels like a digital Yenta.
Name that service Yenta?
No, this idea of like, oh, you know, you like to play basketball. My friend Johnny likes to play basketball. You two should get together and play some basketball. It's just
you can't do voices. That was beautiful.
Yeah, and so this aside from the notion of, you know, the grandmother going like, oh, no, you got to meet my daughter,
right,
Jenny.
Right. He's not actually necessarily talking about it being a dating service, but it's more about a friend service.
Right.
Well, I'm surprised that they haven't already done that in the sense that it would be relatively easy algorithmically for them to do that.
Well, they do say already the you might know.
Yeah, but the you might know is not a you might like. This is like, you know, and you know, you look at those pictures of like you might know and you're like, gosh, how do you know that? Right? Oh, that's right. I know four people that they know four people. And of course, that's how you know, potentially know each other.
And then there's a whole lot of you might know, you know, to add to friends. What? Who is it? Oh, they're a friend from someone that I was in high school with. I haven't seen that person from high school in 20 years face to face, or at least I saw them at the reunion maybe that – and they went to school someplace and then that person
– But doesn't it make sense that if they could do this, it would be beneficial? I mean, what if you – like you and I seem to be relatively, you know, friendly with each other, right? We know each other for a long time. We completely accidentally met each other when we were both down in the Los Angeles area and became friends. That was because of a very simple connection we had of Santa Cruz, right? And you and I could have just been colleagues at that business and never made that connection and never really known each other. So if Facebook could connect people that have that kind of ability to be close friends, why wouldn't they? Wouldn't it make a better world, Miles?
My concern is I feel there may be a biological aspect to this that is not being considered, or hopefully maybe it is being considered.
What do you mean biological?
Have I ever introduced you to the concept of the monkey sphere?
Yeah, I like this. Go ahead, describe it.
Okay, so when you look at – it's not called this in actual scientific parlance, but I've forgotten the actual name, so I just call it by the name it was introduced to me as.
And monkey's a fun word.
Right. Primates have a certain size brain. And all primates, you know, look at their size of brain. So some smaller primates, smaller brain, that they have a certain troop size. So the number of monkeys in their sphere of influence, their best friend, their worst enemy, the people that are part of their tribe.
There's a social defined size, yeah.
And as you look through different primates and the size of their brain and size of a specific section of their brain, you find that there is what appears to be an almost direct correlation to that brain size to the number of people that are in their troop. The number of people that they can keep together. Now, the way it was described to me, the way I read it online, was think of a monkey named Slappy. And Slappy wears a pirate costume, has an eye patch over, and is, you know, kind of funny.
He sounds adorable.
Right. Now think of a second monkey and think of attributes for that one. And think of another monkey. After a while, they stop being distinct in your mind. They just start being monkey, you know, or monkey in a pirate suit. They start taking on more of a caricature.
I'll always be fond of Slappy, though.
Yes, exactly. There's a certain number of people in your life that you think of in three-dimensional terms, that you think of in terms of they have a favorite color.
That's a pretty big number, though.
For human beings, it's about 50 people. Once you get above that number, things start getting a little more two-dimensional.
I don't think it's that small.
Tends to be.
Nah, because just at work, there's probably 30 people that I'm connected enough with to think about them individually and know who their spouses are. And that's just work. And I've only been here 3 years.
The thing is, I may...
But in any case, whatever size it is, it's smaller than 1,000, right?
I can recognize the person who picks up my garbage. I can recognize them. It's the same person every day. Same thing with my...
Every day? You get garbage picked every day? You are a slob.
Sorry, every week. the same thing with my postal worker every day.
Except for Sunday. I gotcha.
And yet, I don't know much about them. They're kind of a character.
Right,
they wave to me. I wave to them. So in my brain, I have that switch of... good, you know, happy person that would be beneficial to me.
And you're right that in the monkey sphere idea, even a colleague that I'm relatively close with from a work perspective and chat about projects and stuff like that, if there was to be an earthquake and I was dealing with an emergency situation, they wouldn't come up in my thought process at all, right? Because in my immediate sphere, even if it's my sister on the East Coast, she's going to be in my thoughts around that emergency, right? Because I'm close with those people. So there is a different definition of kind of a close tribe aspect of my capability.
Yeah.
And not just mental capability, it's also time commitment, right? We have a certain amount of time, and the more time you spend with people, the more connected you are with them, so you think about them more. So if you see somebody like once a week, a garbage person, and never have a conversation with them, they're not going to enter into your tribe.
Right. Now, and there are different levels. There's different, like, how far away they are from that sphere. So there are gradations. At the same time, if we were some other species of primate that had a slightly smaller portion of that brain, let's say hypothetically that it was possible for us to have a similar intelligence but a smaller portion of that part of your brain, then our tribes would be smaller.
Right. So – you're talking about this regard to Zuckerberg thinking about Facebook actually producing more like, you should know this person, ideas. Yeah. So the question I've got for you is, if I have a relationship with somebody and that person is really into cars and I see them every once in a while and I like them and we chat about cars sometimes and they're also interested in, I don't know, action movies or something. Maybe I go to an action movie with them and we have a beer and I'm friends with them. Mm-hmm. And there's another person that is almost exactly like that person, but they're really into small electronic computers and programming iOS devices, and also they have a beer and action movies with me. That second person is going to have more engagement with me in dialogue. We could potentially be even closer and friends and spend more stuff. So wouldn't it be – it's not like growing my network of people. It's just getting rid of Slappy, the pirate monkey, who's into cars and picking up, what are we going to say, Drake?
Now, are you sure, though?
Well, that's the question. Is it a sighting to move on and letting go of people, or is it adding to your network?
The thing is, the network that we have on Facebook, first off, is not necessarily a direct correlation to what our actual thought process is about who is a friend and who isn't.
No, of course not.
Leaving aside the folks who refuse to go on Facebook that I'm still friends with or the like. But there is a tendency to treat the online world, especially among tech companies, as an algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
A tendency to treat relationships as an algorithm, to treat
it's not that they're treating the relationship as an algorithm, they're modeling it as an algorithm because that's all they've got.
True, but how is that different than arguing semantics?
Well, they're providing services regarding that relationship, and they base those services off the algorithms they've got. So it's not like they're minimizing the relationships into that set. But what's your point of it?
Well, this idea of you're going to expose or bring forward people that you should know. If I were a lonely person, I was coming to a new town, that would be a wonderful resource. It would be invaluable. On the other hand, let's say you're at the saturation point. Then what effect does that have?
Well, if the algorithm is good enough, they're going to introduce you to someone who is really good at meditation and spending less time engaging with people, and you'll learn that skill from them.
But that notion of ceding that portion of my social life to social networks, like maybe I already have already because I'm on a social network.
Yeah, except that, Miles, the way that you do it right now is completely random by choice.
It is.
And theoretically, Facebook knows that there's this amazing Sammy the Monkey that you could hang out with where eye patches together.
But we've already talked about how Facebook has that role with regard to fake news, how a lot of people have come forward saying, I don't like the fact that there was fake news on Facebook because it swayed people's judgment based upon false information, therefore leading to a bad judgment, whatever you believe that
sure.
judgment to be.
That nipples should be covered at all times.
So to say that there should be no discussion about how a particular algorithm is brought forward, how they should be relating to that data, how they should be curating that data, seems important. It seems to be something that we should bring up to say, are you taking into account the biology? Because the algorithm, the model may work.
They're definitely taking advantage of the biology. That's why they're so good at getting us to waste our time on their
sure.
service.
But at the same time, the profit motive for snack foods is not people's health.
So let me ask you this.
It's more engagement.
Of course.
Right?
That's what companies do. They take advantage of us as much as possible to pull out revenue from us. But let me ask you this. If Facebook said, hey, we figured out these four people that you would really like to know in this area, and they're going to benefit your life so much that we think it's worth some money. You give us $20, we won't do any advertising or anything, and we'll introduce you guys. What do you think of that?
Wait, I'm going to pay to meet someone that I don't know in the
sure.
hopes that I would...
No. Facebook knows that you guys will like each other.
Facebook has a model that we
Facebook
would...
Facebook has a model
has
that
a
says...
Has a predictive model that we would like
that says, this is a person that Miles would like. Miles really should meet Slappy. So... First off, the question is it valid? Can they do it?
Can they charge money for it? Sure.
No.
Do I think
can they achieve a good match? Can they find you someone that you're gonna like really like hanging out with and be like a really great friend?
I question that.
My good friendships are kind of priceless to me. And I did it randomly. It's just like stumbling through mm-hmm. the world and you bump into people, and if you bump into them and you're both in the right type of mood and you both have the right time on your hands and you start to get to know each other. And then you both kind of work hard when it gets tough. Those are all really a lot of chance. But theoretically, an algorithm could just be like, this guy is
And
cool.
You know what? A lot of the very valuable relationships in my life have come from places where I didn't expect it.
Mm-hmm.
Come from places where I, in another portion of my life, would not have gotten along with this person. Or maybe I didn't get along with the person to begin with.
At first,
and then over time... I came to see qualities in them, or they brought out qualities in me that were considered a general good.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is there's two ways of thinking about this, right? Think of like one of your closest friends, right? And if you didn't know them at all, and all of a sudden you could get introduced to them, what an amazing
gift. I don't think it would work.
Why?
I think of my best friend right now, if we met each other now, there's no way that we would have a friendship that even approaches what we have now.
Right, because it's built across time.
Yeah, and we're also different people.
Sure.
When we met, it was we were in, 13 years old, and
he still had both eyes. He didn't have the patch.
We didn't have the career. We didn't have the same training. We, in fact, influenced
each other.
You lived
in the same town. Not across the country, across the state.
But I mean, aside from that, there was also that aspect of another reason that we are friends is because of the influence we've had upon each other to make ourselves the person that we are. If you are already that well-formed person and then introduced to someone that is also well-formed, part of that bond is lost.
Have you made any good friends in the last 3 years?
3 years. Good friends, I would say no.
Huh.
I mean, if you're thinking about it in terms of when I think of relative to many of the other good friends that I have.
Mm-hmm. I guess kind of my point is that in the last 5 years, I've probably pulled into my circle of people that I consider friends, maybe three people with partners that, you know, in the last 15 years, last 10 years, last 15 years, something like that. Probably 40 people that are friends. Well, maybe 20 people that are friends. And so I've gone through phases of changing who my close friends are. It's happened for me.
Sure.
So I can see meeting somebody and going, wow, I really want to get to know them. I don't have a objection from that. And if it could be sped up by an algorithmic functionality, I'm not opposed to that at all.
Yeah, maybe you're just asking for the wrong 3 years. This past 3 years, just
you've been busy. You got a small child. That's
well,
no time to meet people.
And my father. And
yeah, that's
job,
true.
And yeah,
it's... sorry for bringing all that pain up.
No. It's just
hey, let's move on. So you're not so game on it. I'm curious. We'll see what Facebook actually does.
I'm curious about the ramifications of the social engineering.
Yeah,
because it goes beyond something like Amazon saying, "Hey, here's something that you might like to buy." To here is someone in your sphere of influence, another human being. The commitment is larger to me.
Yeah.
The social pressure that goes along with it, I see as being more stress. So I'm very much in favor of technology to help reduce stress, not necessarily to complicate my life. And that's why I'm wary of it.
Self-driving cars might help simplify your life and reduce stress, assuming they do a good job.
Yes. Who's making self-driving cars?
A few companies supposedly are doing it. Because of Uber's news that we've been covering consistently about how crappy a company they are, and actually I've talked to a couple engineers that used to work there. One still was working and was looking for work. Another person left. Not a cool place to work. I'm way down with the Uber is not a good place to use as a service. I'm sorry to be that way, but normally I don't do that kind of thing, but I'm fully on no thanks Uber. Lyft, therefore, has become my ride of choice when I don't have a vehicle and had a great time using them.
Yeah, it's sad to say, but they're kind of like, if you don't do Uber, who's the other one?
Lyft.
They're
yeah.
kind of like the Burger King to McDonald's.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, I've used Lyft a few times. It's great. I had a situation where I like left a thermos in the car. And I was actually going quite a ways. And I texted the driver after, you know, they have like a little button, lost item. So I pushed the lights on him. And I was texted the driver. I said, can you drop it off at my work? And the next day it was at my work. And like, just, I don't know.
That's awesome.
Cool connection of like having a good connection with somebody briefly. And of course, they're, you know, you're paying them a lot of money and all that. Anyway, so I've been having a good time using Lyft. So if you have any questions about Uber or Lyft, go for the switch.
Right. Now, there's a company called Waymo, which is part of Alphabet, a.k.a. Google. That's how everyone knows it. They like being called Alphabet, but it's Google. And Waymo has been in the news lately because one of their engineers left and took a whole bunch of their intellectual property.
And where'd they go?
And went to Uber.
Oh.
And Uber has been doing
filed
some pushback.
Suits.
Yeah. But Uber has – Waymo has filed suits against
sorry.
Uber.
Yes.
Uber has recently been telling that engineer, like, give back the information, delete all of the copies that you have or you're fired. You know, it's a question of why he's still there. But that's a whole – that ethics of Uber, we're not going to get into again. However, it does bring up this question of like, well, what will they do then? Well, Waymo – now, I just want to back up just a little bit, which is Google / Alphabet invested heavily in Uber.
Interesting. Why?
And, well, they seem like a good bet. I mean, Google Ventures in general will invest in a lot of places out there.
Sure.
Any large company, any successful company is going to make investments in different areas.
Sure.
Now, obviously, the love between Google / Alphabet and Uber is tenuous at best right now.
Right, right.
So it wasn't all that surprising for me to see an article about Lyft and Waymo now making a deal to make self-driving cars.
To be clear, when we talk about Google's self-driving car, that's Waymo now.
Yes.
So Waymo, the way you go, Waymo, is the self-driving entity. The most, like, from my understanding, the most successful self-driving vehicle that exists,
right? Most advanced, yeah, from the news reports anyway.
Right. They're test-driving vehicles in California and Arizona.
How many miles driven? They're far ahead of competitors,
right.
Yeah.
All right. And they got that cute little car.
Aside from the Lexus that they had in the other.
Okay. So Waymo is making some kind of deal with Lyft. What are they saying? What are they doing?
Well, to work with them to get Lyft to be moving more driverless.
Interesting.
Now, here comes the thing for me. Let's say that Lyft does become driverless. That means that the company that you and I may prefer over Uber – I actually haven't used Lyft, so it doesn't really
affect. It's the same drivers, right? Because all the drivers have stickers for both types of service.
Right, except that if Lyft takes a lead and goes driverless before Uber.
With Waymo could potentially do that relatively soon.
Right, that means that drivers would be kind of shunted over and be biased towards Uber. Uber would be the company that if you wanted a job driving, then you would. But then you'd be competing against the car, the driverless car anyway. I'm honestly very conflicted about this. I want self-driving cars on the road. I absolutely want them.
It's not safe for our society to continue to have humans driving vehicles.
Absolutely agree.
So no matter what occurs, we should move down the path of less people driving vehicles.
Fewer people, yes. But
I love you.
But it still brings forward this notion of what do we do for all these people that are driving now for them? Now, admittedly,
for a living.
Uber and Lyft are relatively new technologies. Uber and Lyft drivers did not exist, what, more than 5 years ago? It just didn't exist as an economy.
Right. Of course, those people were there were more people driving cabs at that time.
Yes, but the transition has not been the same at all.
No. There's more people driving now, professionally driving people around than there used to be.
Absolutely, yes.
But what you're saying is that this is going to remove those people.
We're looking at professional drivers as they exist right now.
Yeah.
If you're talking about limousine drivers and bus drivers.
Small percentage compared to truck drivers. Yeah.
Yes, but let's look at all that whole group. There are many economists that are talking about something like 25,000 of those jobs lost per month once self-driving cars appear.
Basically, as fast as the vehicles can be turned out,
You
lose people. And one vehicle can actually remove two drivers.
Yeah, and you're talking about a non-trivial chunk of the population here.
It's drastic and absolutely, and I fully support it happening because humans are bad at driving and people die all the time.
Yeah.
And for the friends that I've lost because of car accidents, I just can't support the idea of humans, these, you know, meat bags still driving metal around.
But there's the conflict, though, of...
So no, the conflict is how we balance our society and how we take care of people.
Yes,
that's the same. It's been that way for years. This is going to be a drastic shift, and hopefully will push us into a stage where we can take care of each other better. My hope is that way.
Current legislation that's getting passed, current guidelines that are being passed, I don't see us going in that direction. In fact, I see us going in the opposite direction. That if you don't have a job, you are worth less. You have less access to many services. You have less access, obviously, to the ability to sustain
yourself. Will a lot
yourself.
Of vehicles driving all the time reduce the cost of transportation?
Reduce the cost of transportation? I don't know about that. Probably just because human beings cost the most.
Right now, some jobs, some people have jobs that require them to transport quite a while. And vehicles actually cost a lot of money to do that. So you have it's common for kind of a rich environment to have a lot of people that are doing gardening, a lot of people that are doing mm-hmm. services in the home, and they have to transport via bus. And the schedule means a lot of wasted time taking public transportation. If driving self-driving vehicles become cheap enough, those could potentially change – the vehicles could change the way people get around at every level in our society. I'm trying to look at the halo, you know, the bright side. I agree that it's going to be devastating for a large population. I'm hoping that as a society we benefit – we reap reward as a society enough to benefit everybody. I would like personally legislation that taxed self-driving vehicles and put that money back into our infrastructure and our society and help support people, because in my mind, if you're not having a person drive and you have a machine doing the same type of labor, that should be taxed at some level to benefit the people that lost their job, but in general just benefit society.
Yeah, I'm not as convinced about that mechanism, but I agree with the overall, you know, arc of your position.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and his user permission, and GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. Use our stuff any way you'd like, just let them know we made it. The theme song is by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. The title today is by Miles Elam. Alternative Energy and Alternative Security. Miles, thanks for being here, and thanks for the title today.
Always a pleasure. I don't know if the title's all that great, but you know.
Whatever. It works
Whatever.
For me.
It works.
Join us June 19th. Learn more at live.geekspeak.org. You can ask us questions and such via email or just go to geekspeak.org and click on support to support the show. Okay, so for an after show thing, I had to get Comcast set up for my new house, right? Because I'm moving. So I have Comcast already at my one address and I want it at my new address. So I get online, I think it was online, it might have been on the app, and I go, oh, here's, like, where's the button I need to push to say I'm moving at some point, right? And so I finally find the, are you moving? Click on the link. It says, when do you want to turn off the service at your old house? The first question they ask, they don't even ask me where I'm moving. I was like, oh, well, not till June 15th, because that's the timeline I'd like to have some overlap. When do you want your new service turned on? I couldn't pick the same day, but I could pick Saturday. Pick Saturday. What's your new address? I entered it in. They said, great. We'll have somebody call you. This is late at night. It's like, okay, boom. Well, that was actually a little easier than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be hard to do this.
Famous last words.
So the next morning at like 10 o'clock, I get a phone call. And it's just some random area code. And I'm like, well, I'll answer it. Sometimes I'll hang up on them if it's some salesman. And it's Comcast. So, hi, it's Comcast, and you're moving. And no one confirms the information I had. Oh, I can activate it today. I don't have to wait till Saturday. Yeah, it's fine. Okay, cool. Everything's good. Thank you. Hang up the phone. That was amazing. That was just, like, incredibly amazing. So that night, I go back to my old house, and I go through all my piles of stuff. I've got a lot of stuff, including an extra Motorola Comcast-supported modem. I know I have this because I bought an upgraded one, so I've got the old one. I'll move the old one, set it up, look around.
Because you upgraded, not that you stopped renting from them. You had ones you already owned and then you upgraded.
Right, to get a better speed. So I look through all my stuff for a long time because I cannot find it. I finally deduce that in my hubris, I decided to get rid of something I didn't need. And why would I need a second cable modem? So I gave it to somebody or I took it down to recycling, whatever. Who knows? So I don't have it. The first time ever I've ever gotten rid of equipment I actually needed was this one time.
No, you didn't need it. You had a passing want of something and you could totally do without.
What do you mean?
That's not a need.
Well, meaning that this piece of equipment, if I had it in my storage, I'd be using it right now, right? I didn't have it in my storage because I gave it away. Need, whatever. Are you saying that, like, from a perspective of, like, privilege, it's not a need? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying, like, you didn't need it. It would have been a nice to have, but it really doesn't affect your quality of life that it
no,
wasn't there.
No. So this new house actually has almost no cell service. So it's actually very hard to get phones and stuff. So having internet there is going to be really useful. So in any case, I go down to the store the next day, the Comcast store, and I go, hey, I need a router for a little while I'm transferring addresses. So after a bit of time, they're like $10 a month. I'm like, yeah, it's fine. I only need it for a little bit of time. So I get it, and I walk out the door, and I go do some other errands, and my wife calls. Hey, the network at the house just went down. Oh, right, of course it did. Now the trouble begins. So I go back to the office. The long and the short of it is they couldn't give me a Wi-Fi access point because of their system wouldn't let me have one and not use it at the address that I was at, because I had my own one at the address that I was at. They finally were able to get it to work again, and I brought it back over to the new house and plugged it in. So the only trouble was this very edge thing. Other than that, the staff was great. The response was great. I could do almost everything from my phone. I had a really pleasant time with Comcast, besides that one little trick.
You want to talk about it on air?
Well, we've been recording this whole thing. Maybe I'll put it at the end of the show. No, my point is, like, I am always ragging on it, and I finally felt like they did the good job. Gotta be fair.